This show is furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervie and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KABC.com. I am Alan Gervie, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. And today, on this beautiful Memorial Day weekend, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. And I am here, well, not here with Carrie, but I'm in separate locations.
You
Carrie's
are.
On her phone. Carrie, are you calling someone or what's going on?
I'm not. I'm just pulling up some stuff on the information for our guests today because, you know, Genevieve, our wonderful producer, sends us all of it. So since I'm on the phone with you and you're FaceTiming me, I had to use someone else's phone. Look at that. I'm nifty.
Whose phone are you
crafty.
Using?
It's my boyfriend's phone.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. So what did you find about our guest? I mean, I don't want to cut you off here, but so go ahead.
No, I have some surprises for you, Alan. And as soon as she comes on, you're actually going to be pretty surprised at some of the stories I have.
Really?
Yes.
Is this called a tease? Are you teasing the audience?
I am teasing the audience. You know, it's good to do that. People go, oh, okay, maybe there's something fun or interesting or scary that I'm going to learn, you know? Hopefully.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I'm just happy that you're here today with us because it is Memorial Day weekend. There's some great sales out there. The prices are
out there. Don't do it.
Sorry. There are some great sales. You can get a lot off.
You know what? I'm going to kill you. Let's talk about something actually good about
Memorial
Day. All right.
So you're not shopping this weekend. The stores aren't open. You can shop over Amazon. I hope you're enjoying your Memorial Day weekend. It's nice. First time I've done this show in many years from the swimming pool because I've been relaxing to taking a break from my week on Memorial Day weekend. What about you, Carrie? Have you been up to anything exciting other than maybe relaxing?
I worked this weekend. You know, I covered the protest in Sacramento. I got some good interviews. I watched, there were about 32 speakers and I just, you know, it was very interesting. Very interesting. There were, you know, a lot of red, I'd say a lot of red, but in this crowd and sea of red, there were a lot of blue. And I was very, very surprised at that. I'll tell you that much.
So tell me a little bit, you're talking about protests. What are people protesting?
Basically, open California. And that's what people are saying. You know, that's just the basic, you know, this is why they were out there protesting is open California. But there were other things. They were protesting their rights. They were protesting the overreach of Governor Newsom's power. They're protesting a lot. And, you know, there were Marines who spoke. There were cops who spoke. There were politicians who spoke, people who were running. It was very interesting. Very interesting. It was a good crowd. There was a lot of music. It was almost like a festival, less of a protest, I have to say. The spirit was, it was very high and happy. It wasn't angry. You didn't see a lot of anger. You didn't see a lot of people screaming. Unlike last time, May 1st, there were cops with, you know, riot gear and they looked like they were ready to attack. This time the cops were relaxed. They were back from the festival or the protest, I should say. It was a protest. And they weren't in riot gear and they were just.
So,
yeah.
What's interesting, Carrie. Yeah. You know, I can picture that. This world that we live in is made up of so many different people. I am far from that. I live in an area, a very residential area, very family friendly, and the streets are really quiet. People are walking around in masks. I went cycling, and everyone in Gillette Park, which is a very small little ranch where you can go with your family cycling, we're all wearing masks. not a lot of protesters. So there's just a real dichotomy going on, and I don't know how you slice. I can't believe I just said it. How you slice it. No, people are wondering why I'm just giddy from being in the pool. But it's a completely different world for some families, people who are very, concerned about their families, and they're not out on the protesting. So it's interesting. But thank you for covering that. Who are you covering it for?
Well, for the of course, you, hello, and the podcast that I'm doing again since 2008, the Red Pill podcast, which was mostly a fun conspiracy show. But for so many years, I've covered people talking about what was going to happen in 2020 and 2030. And, when you're doing a conspiracy show, a lot of it's fun. A lot of it's okay. They get really into it, and it's fun to hear in the stories. But I'll tell you something. Some of these people who I thought were crazy, everything that's happening, I have it on tape. They said it was going to happen, and it's happening. How would they know that? How would they know that? And to me, that's fascinating. So I'm bringing them back. I'm bringing guests that I had on years and years ago, putting new guests on. And I'd like it to be a forum where there is there's two sides. So you hear one side, but you also hear the other side of it. And you don't hear that a lot because there's so much censorship. And I've been talking about this for a very long time that I don't, I think that it's unconstitutional. It's wrong. And I hope there's some massive lawsuits coming. I've heard there are, but
next week we have an interesting show bringing up the topic of lawsuits.
Yeah.
We're going to have Mark Garagos, who was supposed to be on our show last week with Judy A. Mikovits, but Judy A. Mikovits kind of hogged the microphone with Gary Kasem.
You're terrible. You know how many people laughed at the fact that you said I took over the show? I got one thing in. And I was lucky to do so.
It's funny because I was wearing a shirt last week and I forgot. I meant to show it to you while you were spouting off. My shirt, you didn't even read what my shirt said, did you?
The green shirt that's on YouTube all over the place.
YouTube.
Yeah.
Everywhere. The green shirt is on YouTube, but the KBC logo is in front of it, so you can't see what it says. And it was pointing your direction, and it said, "It may look like I'm listening to you, but I'm really listening to Green Day in my mind."
I did see that.
And that's how I felt all of last week's show. It looked like I was listening. I sounded like I was listening, but I was really, playing Green Day songs in my mind. So I didn't mean to. No offense, because I really, obviously, Carrie, that I believe in your right to say what you want to say, as you believe in my right to say what I want to say. And that's what you're talking about in your podcast. And you've always done that.
Yeah.
You have some very strong opinions, but it's not exclusive. You do want to hear other sides, and that's why you've been successful in providing those podcasts.
Yes, and one thing I'll tell you, Alan, which is very interesting. Do you know about the cop who got fired for saying his piece and basically talking about some of the unconstitutional laws that were being made, and he wasn't going to enforce them? And his videos went viral, and he was fired. So in one day, they raised $500,000 for this cop in one day. The day after he was fired, $500,000 they raised for him. He got up and spoke yesterday, but he didn't speak to the protesters. He turned around and he spoke to about the 200 cops that were lined up. Now, we were not allowed on the actual Capitol building grounds, just to let you know. Nobody was allowed there, even though that's our house and that's our right to do so. And I've been at that building for 7 years now, creating laws up there and passing them. And I've never seen any protest not allowed on those grounds. But there are about 200 cops. He turned around, took the mic, and he spoke to them. And it was really beautiful. And he thanked them, and he thanked them for what they do and everything.
Well, it sounds like you had to be there because it sounds beautiful, but I can't really visualize it.
Oh, my Lord. You know what? I was going to say we should have him on the show. He's very interesting.
I'm sure he is. There's a lot of interesting people. In fact, our guest today, and you teased it before, I don't think, we want to tease anymore, because one of the issues that we're dealing with now with this pandemic is the increased rate of domestic violence and abuse, spousal abuse. People who are not out protesting but are in their homes. There's a lot of things that are going on behind closed doors that I think are very, very concerning for a lot of people. And, you know, we are presenting today someone who doesn't really need a long introduction because I think most people know who she is, Lorena Gallo. So when you say Lorena Gallo, a lot of people say, I'm not sure I know who that is. But when you say Lorena Bobbitt, people know who that is. Anyone who, you know, maybe children don't know and maybe they shouldn't know. But, you know, 25, 26 years ago, Lorena Bobbitt, John Wayne Bobbitt, was on everyone's mind because of what occurred. And there's a really wonderful film, and I don't know if you say wonderful because it's meaningful, coming out called I Was Lorena Bobbitt. It's coming out tomorrow on Memorial Day on Lifetime, and we're going to talk to Lorena Bobbitt after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Working on a night move, trying to make some front page driving news. Working on a night move.
All right, we are back. I am Alan Gervie, and I'm here with Carrie Kasem. We are enjoying our Memorial Day weekend. We hope you are. One of the things we touched on before the break was with all of the effects and consequences of the pandemic, one of the unfortunate ones is the increase in domestic violence that has happened during the lockdown. And it's a really important subject that Lifetime Television is addressing head on, along with the National Domestic Violence Hotline and National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. The campaign is Stop Violence Against Women. This is a particularly important time to talk about this. And there's a really great movie that's coming. Carrie and I had the opportunity to see it. And we're really impressed with, I don't know how to say it, Carrie, but it really hit, the acting is great. It's a tough, sensitive subject. A lot of people want to make jokes about it. But I think the film really handles all of the touchy areas very well. The film is called I Was Lorena Bobbitt. And it will be premiering on the Lifetime channel tomorrow, Memorial Day at 8 p.m. And, you know, Carrie, you always say that I give such wonderful introductions and I explain everything about the person. I think Lorena Bobbitt, or Lorena Gallo now, doesn't really need an introduction because so many people followed her story with her former husband, John Wayne Bobbitt. And a lot of people know a lot about it, but this film really brings it home. Lorena Gallo, we want to welcome you to Gervie's Law today.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Carrie, for this incredible platform. It is amazing to actually bring my story to life through communicated through a visual, because that's exactly what I wanted to show. I wanted to be transparent. I wanted to be raw by showing the public that these atrocities of domestic violence and sexual assault do happen. Not only here in the United States, but in the world. And so it's really important to address these critical issues. As you mentioned, the accumulation of stress due to the coronavirus pandemic that we're living now is the lack of the social support because of the COVID-19, the sudden shifts in daily routines, the closing of our communities, you know, schools are closed. Reports actually have increasing on gun and ammunition. People are buying alcohol more, and the sales in the United right. States during this coronavirus pandemic are very concerning because, you know, it's a link that exists between firearms access and fatalities and domestic violence incidents. So we are living in a social and health epidemic in the middle of a coronavirus pandemic. So,
you know, Lorena, I'm so glad you brought up the alcohol issue, because a lot of people don't think about it during this time where alcohol consumption is up because of the stress and because of the uncertainty of the future. And that's something that plays a big role in your film, I Was Lorena Bobbitt. You have been working on helping people through Lorena's Red Wagon and Lorena Gallo Foundation. Together, you've been helping victims of domestic abuse. What was it that came up in the last couple of years that got you motivated to be the executive producer and narrator on the film for Lifetime, I Was Lorena Bobbitt?
You know, for many years, we have to remember that it's important to keep in mind that this is a story about domestic violence and sexual assault. And victims and survivors will find themselves in my story. You know, my story is relatable to them, to many people who are trapped in an abusive relationship, right? So for many years, I kept a low profile and avoided attention, and I wanted to have a normal life with my partner and our child. I started volunteering in domestic violence shelters around my community, and I become an advocate against domestic violence and sexual assault. And I realized that not much has changed for domestic violence victims and survivors in almost 3 decades. So I realized how domestic violence and sexual assault still is very sadly very common in our society. So I feel that after going through all these painful situations in my life, suffering when I was married to John Bob and my ex-husband, if I could help at least one person to escape domestic violence, then all my pain and suffering that I live with him, whatever I went through, was not in vain. So these are very serious issues that hurt millions and millions of victims, and I realized that I had to do something. And it doesn't happen only here in the United States. Coming from Latin American background, you know, as an immigrant, I was an immigrant young woman who came to this country, and the suffering that these women have going through, and it's happening in our borders. They're afraid to call the police because they are afraid to be deported. So that's another issue. I feel that this still needs to be a lot of education and awareness around this public and health social epidemics. Also, like I said, the treatment of immigrants in the United States, I feel that I needed to do something more and more to do. And basically, this is an amazing platform. First of all, I did a documentary last year with executive producer Jordan Peele, and it was through Amazon Prime. And now this is another incredible platform with Lifetime Television, you know, and it premieres this 25th, tomorrow, actually, at 8 o'clock, Monday.
Right.
And so it's amazing that I did this amazing projects and documentaries and movies that I keep going with, talking about this awareness, you know. And so to me, it's fantastic too that I could actually keep helping others in an abusive relationship.
And I'm so sorry. I want to thank you for that. I want to thank you for what you do, because there's an interesting story, Lorena, that I have with you. My cousin, Paul Kasem, was stationed in Virginia in the 90s. And I went to stay with him for the summer. And he said to me one day, he said, you know, just down the street, there's a nail shop. Because I asked him where, you know, I need my nails done. He's like, you're not going to believe this. Lorena Bobbitt works there. And I didn't believe him. And I'm like, this, no way. So I actually, I don't know if you're going to remember this. You probably won't, because you do so many.
Wait a second. Carrie.
Yeah.
She did your nails?
Yes, she did.
No way.
She did my nails.
Way.
You did my nails, and you did it with my girlfriend, Jill. She's this beautiful black girl that looks like a model. And it was me and my cousin, Paul, and you wouldn't take a picture with us, and we understood. We got it. You know, we're like, okay.
Wait, Carrie, I got to ask you.
Yeah.
When did that occur?
It was in the 90s.
Before or after the, I mean, some people don't know what the big event is, of course, and we haven't said it, but of course, Lorena is well known for slicing off her husband's penis.
Yes. And then they found it and reattached it, and he did a porno film, and that shows what kind of character that man has. That, I mean, proved everything. Sorry. That it's a disgusting.
You're jumping around.
Disgusting
here.
Man. Anyway, so you did.
Well, don't say that.
But it's my opinion.
We don't want to get sued. But again,
it's my opinion. The man is disgusting. Sue me. That's my opinion. I can have that opinion.
Lorena, we have to ask you, at the beginning of the movie, it says the events have been contested by John Bobbitt. Are you concerned that your ex-husband whose penis you slashed off.
Can I finish? You know what, Alan?
I mean, we're going to get sued.
Aren't we're not going to get about- sued. Go ahead.
Okay, Lorena, what are the legal issues there?
I don't think that, well, since he already enlarged himself, I don't think he mind, you know, but I don't think it's anything against me. So, but, you know, I can change my past. I mean, I said, you know, myself, and I accept who I am. I also realize that because of that tragic experiences before as a victim of intimate partner violence has shaped my the person who I am today. And as an advocate, I realize I have a platform and a voice to be able to continue to help domestic violence and sexual assault victims. So through the Lorena Gallo Foundation, again, I have an organization, and it's just wonderful to do this. I mean, one of the purpose of my organization is to raise awareness in prevention of domestic violence and sexual assault through education and at scholastic levels. I'm a keynote. I'm a keynote speaker in my community, and I do a lot of community engagements. So my main goal is to open an emergency shelter and provide immediately assistance such as housing, food, clothing, and a safe environment for people looking to escape abusive situations. So that's my mission. I don't look at the past. I go from now, the present, to the future. So,
but Lorena, isn't it true, though, that you need to use your platform so people understand what happened? Because the film is so clear and so credible in showing the abuse and why you were actually acquitted from the malicious wounding charges because of temporary insanity. And it shows the effect and the impact that kind of abusive behavior can have on a woman and why you took matters into your own hands, so to speak.
Well, yeah, I wanted to, like I said before, I wanted to be raw. I wanted to show the visual effects, because it's one thing when I do my speeches, it's one thing to actually tell my story. My people are fascinated with my story. And, you know, as Jordan Peele put it one time, you know, it's like, Lorena, you are like a big tree with many branches. And, you know, it's fascinating that the people like you as an attorney can see the layers of my story, of my case, and, you know, peel them everyone. And the more you come to the core, the more you are intrigued to find out, you know, how women treated domestic violence back then. We're talking about almost 30 years. I mean, there was no Violence Against Women's Act. There was no hotline that I used to.
Right.
Or even if I called 911, the dispatchers on 911, they didn't know how to help me, because they have no idea. They have no training before. Now we have police officers and to train, you know, to police officers to go in. And I wish I had a lady officer one time, because I didn't want to show my bra, you know, and my bruises to this, you know, man who was dressed in blue as a police officer. And a lot of things have changed, but there's a lot more to be done, and we have to close those gaps. We must close those gaps, because yes, we have advanced and there is a step in the right direction, but at the same time, there's still gaps and avenues that we need to close to help victims of domestic violence. And that's
one of the interesting, you know, Lorena, I just wanted to say, because it's so important in the film, you talk about reporting this to the police. I think it's six times or however many times, number of times. And you never got the help you needed. And that's a point that comes through, that I think what you're talking about, things have changed. You know, with the Me Too movement and before the Me Too movement, you were fighting this alone, and the police and others were not there to help you.
No, and, you know, a lot of people were talking about this. You know, this caused a big wave. Is that, you know, obviously, gender inequality automatically. When my case was going on, men were very supportive of him, and women were supportive of me. You know, it's like very, there was no equality, you know. So, but there were men supportive of him because of the nature of the case. Obviously, you know, there was his manhood. And I think that a lot of jokes, you know, were saying because men basically didn't know how to handle, you know, that. And I think they wanted to neutralize by, you know, saying these jokes and everything and all that, which, by the way, the media did not help me because I went into a very stressful situation, and I was depressed. I was very depressed. I couldn't even open the TV and see a comedian laughing about it. How could they laugh about somebody who just got raped? I mean, when a child gets raped, they don't laugh about it, right? So
why
should laugh? A victim is a victim. So why would they should laugh about a woman being raped by their husband, which, by the way, is marital rape, and that happens. That exists. So why?
No, Lorena.
A victim is a victim, and
yes,
a crime is a crime.
Yes, it is. And
you're absolutely right. And one of the things that, you know, came out in your trial when they talked about post-traumatic stress disorder, major depressive disorder, anxiety disorders, all of these things that were so germane to your case, were so part of who you were and why you were acquitted with the charges, are so important to understand. We want to talk a little bit more about that, but we have to take a quick break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law. Still thinking about what can go wrong? Instead, let's get excited about what can go right on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah. We are back. I'm Alan Gervie, and I am here with Kerry Kasem. We're talking to Lorena Gallo, and the foundation is the Lorena Gallo Foundation for Abused Women and Children. Lorena's Red Wagon as well, part of that. She's at Lorena's Red Wagon. Lots of information if you go to her Facebook page. The film that's coming out tomorrow, I Was Lorena Bobbitt, really interesting. I think it tells the whole story. The acting is great. Danny Montalvo, who plays Lorena, and Luke Humphrey, plays John Bobbitt, do a great job. Didn't you think, Kerry?
I thought they did a fantastic job. And I thought, you know, the woman who played you, Lorena, looked like you in your younger years. I thought they did a great job with casting. Were you a part of that? Were you a part of casting? Did you say yes or no? Or did you go with, okay, this casting director thinks this is the best? Or did you have a say in that?
No, I had a say in that. As an executive producer of my own movie, my goodness, I had the opportunity to actually choose this young lady who really, really resembled a lot in my younger years. To me, it was incredible. Danny and I, basically, you know, it was amazing to get to know her. We spent a considerable amount of time talking about the movie and in her role. She learned about what I went through. She learned about a lot about me. She watched the last year documentary, obviously, and we had talked about and other things. She was ready. She was ready for the role to play me, the young Lorena, and help her a lot with her role.
How was it what was it like?
Go ahead.
Thanks, Alan. I get a question in. What was it like watching somebody play you and go through those scenes? Because some of those scenes were hard to watch. This isn't, you know, an easy movie to watch. You did keep a lot of it with cut when it got too bad. But what was that like for you?
My goodness. It's always difficult to revisit things like this. But I also clearly, you know, I understand that my past has, again, allow me to become the advocate. And I wanted to actually do this movie because I wanted to show not only here in the United States, but in the world, how, you know, this crisis, it really happened. I wanted to show people to visualize in a movie, in a documentary, however, in a visual, to see the true crimes of domestic violence, what's happened. You know, we have a victim, very vulnerable, and we have the brutality of the perpetrators, how can perpetrators can actually be. And so I think it's very difficult for me to go back to those dark places in my life, but I also was mentally prepared, because if I'm an advocate, if I'm going to go ahead and tell my story over and over again, then, you know, I better be strong. And so it's my resilience who actually kept me in my mission to help others in bad relationships like domestic violence and sexual assault. Then I have to do what I have to do.
You know,
one of the scenes that I wanted to talk about in the Thanksgiving scene in 1990, your mother is there, and it's a really wonderful scene with you and your mother and the dynamics with John Bobbitt. Do you know why your mother, and this is something that maybe you found in some of these other situations with a domestic abuse, why was your mother giving John the benefit of the doubt and was kind of supporting him in a way? It was a really interesting and kind of dramatic scene.
Yeah, well, the scene that was a very hard, part to watch, obviously, when I was getting almost run over with a car. My mother was there for Thanksgiving, and she had no idea that, I was being abused physically and mentally and economically and emotional by John, by my ex-husband, my husband then. So I wanted my family to basically think that everything was okay, and that I was living basically my American dream, all right? And that was no what my mother witnessed after I was almost ran over by John with the car.
Yeah.
So I think that she did give her the benefit of the doubt, because I think that because of the machism in patriarchal society we live in Latin America, she thought, well, maybe, this is something that you might, can fix. It's fixable. Your marriage. She's been married for over 50 years. They are being married. My parents, my biological parents have been married for over 50 years. So we look at divorce, and this is culture, of course, cultural, as a, stigma. And so he said, well, you got to fix. And then I told her, I said, Mom, this is wrong. You don't understand the extreme of the abuse, the extreme of physical abuse. And I can never tell her, the sexual assaults or nothing like that. Because, again, domestic violence came with the perception of shame. And I was ashamed. I was afraid. I was scared to tell my parents, to tell my family how ashamed, we living in this dream. But that's why a lot of victims don't say a word. And that's why you should never, ever ask a victim why you didn't leave. Because if you're not, again, we all go back to education. If you're not aware of what the person, the victim is going on, then you should never, it's a slap in the face. It could be cultural,
right,
like mine. It could be religious. I'm a person of faith. God is always there for me. It could be that simply you love your abuser and you wanted to work it out. Or it could be simply that you depend economically, or it's a cultural. And there's many reasons that you can actually, if you don't know that, then you should never ask.
Yeah.
Very interesting stuff, Lorena. Now, you have a 14-year-old daughter now, Olivia, mm-hmm. who's a wonderful girl, volleyball player, swimmer. Do you think that it would be different when you put yourself in the mother role versus your daughter? How do you think it would play out? And obviously, hope, of course, never happens. But just looking at how your mother, maybe from a different culture, from a different era, would things be different with your daughter, Olivia, now, with your relationship?
Absolutely. There's, we're going back to, first of all, there's is a full loaded question, actually. That's your attorney in you asking me. But that is wonderful, because it's, as a mother, I wanted to protect my daughter. Let's start like that, right? So I want her to, I'm very transparent with her. I'm very honest with her. Our dinner table is our the center of the universe. Where, we talk about it. We talk about, obviously, not school because, the COVID-19 closed the school. But But basically, everything is on the table with our family. And, you know, that's something that I have that lack of communication because my parents, my immediate family was not here in the United States when I came as a young immigrant from Venezuela when I was 19 years old, actually 18. And then, you know, my parents were not here. And that communication was broken, you know, since the time that I came to the United States. So, and it cost a lot of money to call my parents from Venezuela. Remember, we didn't have, at that time, we didn't have cell phones or Zoom or the internet or Skype or all of this amazing technology that we have. So we can now contact, you know, my parents or parents. In that case, in this situation. But before it was very expensive. I broke that communication with my parents. So I want them to see that her daughter was okay. So going back to my daughter, yes, it's different. And also the Me Too movement is teaching the younger generations to come out and be, you know, more sensitive about these issues and more empathetic about this. This is not acceptable. I want my daughter to know that she has rights that protect her when she became a woman, you know, when she's going to go to college, and I want her to walk free in college campuses and at night, you know, not to be afraid of anybody who can sexual harass her or, you know, God forbid, something even worse happen, right? So I think that it's very important that this education starts at home. We have to have candid talk with our children, and it's very important that these movies, you know, younger generations are there to for them to see it, and that's why one of the reasons that I made, you know, make sure that these movies are watched by everybody, and I wanted to reach out to every community, every age, every woman, every man, because men are abused too, you know. And
that's, I just want to say that. I'm so sorry to cut you off, Lorena, because I really want to make a point going back to what you were saying about, you know, a few things. My father was the one who said, you know, don't let anybody ever lay a hand on you. We grew up with that. We grew up with him telling us, you know, violence is not acceptable. Nobody should ever lay a hand on you. Women, men, whatever it may be. And he told that to all three of us kids. And so we grew up knowing that was not okay. And then my dad suffered abuse at the hands of his wife. And you know, I have to say this because it upset me so much. I went into Lifetime. They were talking about, you know, possibly we're having talks about possibly doing a show about what happened with my father. And I had an executive there tell me, after she didn't read any of the material we had sent, she said, you know, well, it just sounds like your father's crazy. You know, he didn't leave her. So obviously, you know, he actually said that to me. He's crazy. And I said, well, it's like a woman who's battered. Do you say that to a woman who's battered? They're crazy for not leaving? Is that what you say to people? Is that how you treat people? I walked out of there. No, it's fine. But yeah, it was horrible. And it feel like men don't get the same respect as women do, because men can be abused. Men can be battered. Yeah.
Of course. But we talk about more women, and we said that this is a women's issue. Because,
yes.
You know, statistically, there's more women
absolutely
who are killed and who are abused by men. But men, you know, it's a lower statistic, and it came with a perception of shame for them too, because they said, oh, there's an egotistic, or, you know, again, who's gonna, you know, beat me up, or
right,
I'm a man,
right,
you know,
right, right.
I should be the king of my house, whatever that is. But, you know, at the same I think that children are abused, men are abused. This is a social epidemic.
Yes, it is.
This is affecting children, men and women.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And
it's,
I want that to be heard.
That the words get out. And what you said, Lorena, about, you know, your daughter and the new generation and people learning, it reminds me, we have a wonderful, wonderful video on our Facebook page at Gervie's Law, where we had Gloria Allred on the show. And she took my six-year-old daughter aside, and she explains to her that no one should touch your body, and that they have to have permission. You have to say yes, and not let anyone touch your permission. That's 6 years old. Gloria Allred telling my six-year-old daughter. Lorraine, can you stay with us for a few more minutes? We have to take a break, sure. And then we want to wrap it up. Really appreciate it. We're talking to Lorena Bobbitt. This is Gervie's Law. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, we're back. This is Gervie's Law. I'm Alan Gervie. And we're here with Carrie Case, and we're talking to Lorena Gallo. The Lorena Gallo Foundation deals with domestic abuse in the Red Wagon, Lorena's Red Wagon. Really interesting, Lorena. Tell us a little bit about how Lorena's Red Wagon helps abused women and children by bringing them simple things in a very difficult time. And especially now with coronavirus, I'm sure a lot of people are in need of support and assistance that Lorena's Red Wagon is providing.
Well, Lorena's Red Wagon actually have converted into Lorena Gallo Foundation, which is very important to remember that my foundation is, like I said before, has the purpose of to raise awareness and prevention of domestic violence and sexual assault through education at scholastic levels, community engagement. We participate. We have a lot of community partners in my community and around the United States who bring toys to children to the shelters at Christmas times, and we do food drivings in shelters as well. But Lorena's Red Wagons became Lorena Gallo Foundation. So basically it's Lorena Gallo Foundation now.
Yeah, it's a wonderful foundation.
And, I said before, I mean, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I mean, my main goal is to open an emergency shelter.
Be careful what you say there. I was a little sensitive when you said you were going to cut me off.
Oh, my gosh, Alan, I'm going to kill you after this.
Oh, my goodness. I just crossed my legs.
With words.
Sorry, Lorena. Sorry, I apologize for him.
No, it's okay. You know why? It's part of a human being able to find a humor on things like that.
Oh,
because everyone has a story. And,
yeah.
You know, this humor that we have, like I said before, you know, in within my story, it has a lot of layers. And it's okay to be part of it, you know, humor. Because I don't mind to go to shows and they have comedians like Steve Harvey. I did Steve Harvey before.
Oh,
and
good.
I saw that.
You never know.
I saw when you were on Steve Harvey.
Okay, yeah, good. Yeah, I'm glad you have a sense of humor. I'm really glad.
Yeah. Oh, you have to, because it's life. It's life.
Oh.
And that's what makes me, if you see in the documentary too, you know, you see me laughing sometimes. It's not just me, this. And it's so bizarre that, you know, my own story is connected to humor, because that's exactly what I wanted to. I wanted to connect. If I need to shine the light in this critical issues of domestic abuse and sexual assault, then, you know, humor, if I need to go through comedians, then let be. And that's exactly what I wanted to reach out to, you know, whether it's, you know, in that platform or other platforms, many platforms. Domestic violence is a mission that it needs to be put an end to it. So I don't mind, you know, and it's part of life. I mean, you know, we have to live a life and we have to laugh sometimes.
Absolutely.
So.
And I have to say that my friend Jill is listening right now, and she's the one that came to your nail salon in Virginia when we went down there. I don't know if you're going to remember this, but we took, because you wouldn't take a picture with us. You were shy and you just didn't want the attention. And I thought that was, that was very sweet. And you were very nice to us, but we had you write your initials on our thumbs. And then we took pictures of our nails and we thought that was so cool. So I'm going to try and find these pictures. If we do, I'm going to put them up on the Gervie's Law Facebook site and Instagram, our social media. I think people would love that. But yeah, you were just so down to earth and so sweet, and you didn't want the attention.
Thank you.
You didn't. And I just remembered that. And I just thought that was, you were very cool.
And that's what comes out in the film. You know, it's really, like I said, Karen and I really enjoyed seeing the film, and it's called I Was Lorena Bobbitt. And your sweetness and your you're just a genuine, credible person that comes through in the film that you executive produced. It's interesting because there's been so many things that have happened since back in the 90s when Carrie was talking about being in your your nail salon. It wasn't yours, but, you know, where you worked. I saw somewhere where it said that your former husband, John Bob, still sends you love notes. Is that true?
Yes, yes. And through Lorena Gallo Foundation, you know, it's a public organization, obviously. I cannot close it. So he basically goes through my foundation, Lorena Gallo Foundation, and start bullying my supporters, the people. He start, you know, sending nasty things sometimes and, you know, talk about it's not true, whatever, you know, whatever, however.
Wow. So, wow, you know what? You know what would
but I can only shut down the computer and forget about him.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I can do.
But you know what? You know what would be healing for him? And you know what would make him happy? Because he seems like a very miserable, unethical person. Would to just become clean and apologize to you. To just say, I did it. I'm sorry. You know, but he's going to live with this for the rest of his life, and it's going to consume him, and it's going to eventually take him down, whether he gets sick. You know, he seems sick emotionally, but that's just my opinion, not anybody else's. And he seems like he's going to make himself sick physically, because when you live with something like this and you don't apologize, and you don't apologize, it can eat you up inside.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Carrie, we only have another minute, but okay. I want to say, don't you think of all this great work that Lorraine is doing, and in conjunction with the National Domestic Violence Hotline and National Coalition Against Domestic mm-hmm. Violence, the Lifetime Campaign, don't you think that has an impact? I don't care who you are, but John has to be feeling that she took a negative, a super negative, I mean, you can't even imagine the negative, and has turned it into a positive.
Absolutely.
And Lorena, that's something that you yes. could really be proud of.
Yes.
Yes. And I always say, you know, this, and I thank you for that. And I always say silence is not an option, because it wasn't an option for me. Because, you know, see, silence keeps victims trapped, and survivors need to get support in order to escape, you know, they need to be heard and in order to heal as well, you know, like I did. And to end this cycle of abuse, the most courage that we can do is to break our own silence. That's exactly what I wanted to say to everybody. The silence is not an option to anybody.
Yeah, no, it's good true. And when you watch the film, you see it. It's called I Was Lorena Bobbitt. Lorena Gallo is the executive producer and narrator. And by the way, I love the narration that you have throughout the film. It really brings it home when you go from the actors to the real life person. That was a great thing. I don't know if you came up with that idea or not, but it was a great part of the film. It premieres on Lifetime Channel tomorrow, Memorial Day, the 25th at 8 p.m. Lorena,
I wanted to come up with that idea because I wanted to explain to the public that this is what happened, and you know that when I was actually interrogated and everything, so a lot of things were missed, and so I wanted to actually understand, make them, you know, the public to understand that this could happen to a victim, and you know, basically this was happened. That was my story, and to all of the people who feel that, you know, with this COVID-19 and an abusive situation, please, you know, do not isolate yourself. Stay in contact with friends,
right.
family, and neighbors, and always have a safety plan. And one of the things is actually to register for Smart 911, which, you know, they cannot hear you. When you call, it's silent. So, but then the dispatcher, they can record everything.
Right.
Yeah, we have to wrap it up, though.
Officer.
Thank you so much, Lorena.
Thanks so much.
Thank
good
you.
Luck with the, good luck with the movie. Thanks, Lorena. Thanks for being with us. All right. Next week, Mark Garagos. We're going to talk about COVID-19 lawsuits next week. Thanks for listening.
This show is furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.